Transmission will start in 5 seconds from now. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, in.
Hello and welcome to episode 21 of the Roy Harper podcast for April 2009. In this episode, a brief news update, part two of an interview with George Fort, the A to Z of Harper, this time it's the letter T. Some listener feedback, including an actual voicemail, hooray! And of course, a selection of music. First off, some news. The Nick Harper tour is underway and going extremely well, judging by reports. There's a lot of chat about the gigs at the Stormcock.net forums if you want to get involved in that, or perhaps find out about a gig in the future that you might want to go to. I'm going to be at the Cambridge gig in a few weeks, and if any of you are going, I'd love to say hello. The second piece of news is about a Roy remix project. Now, we spoke a few months ago about the kind of tribute album idea which popped up on MySpace, and I haven't heard anything about that for a while, but there's a separate thing going on from an Italian guy called Pasian Duval, who emailed me on Friday, I'm recording this on Sunday, with a sample track of what he's trying to do, which is to get Roy's music out there with a different kind of feel to it and get people more interested in it. He works in some kind of club and put this together, and apparently he's played it a couple of nights and it's gone down quite well. It's quite interesting, to say the least. Anyway, I'll be playing that very shortly. My first music pick this month is East of the Sun from the album Flat Baroque and Berserk.
Bumblebees stumble, the butterflies tumble, the birds on the waterline stare. The heavens have crowned her, the star grass grows round her, her dreams fill the very still air. Just east of the sun, where our loving was done, I can still see her breasts on the edge of the morning. I can still taste the salt in her
head.
lovely track. And now, as they say, for something completely different, this is Passion Duval's remix attempt. This is called There Once Was a Man. Well, it's quite hard to follow that. Passion has a MySpace page, and the address I'll put in the show notes. And he says that more remixes may be forthcoming. Okay, on to our interview. This is part two of my interview with George Fault over in America. Hope you enjoy it.
But the last thing I did in the book was for Russian Camelot.
Oh, that's another great song off of that album, yeah. Actually.
Yeah, it is. And that was a weird one, and that was, it was cool. He wanted the mouse with the ear, you know, the cloning or the...
Oh, that's right, when they grafted the extra ear, yeah.
Yeah, they grew it?
They grew it.
Or did they graft?
That's right. Yeah, actually... No, they grew it off on the back of...
Of a mouse.
Yeah.
And that was, I'm like, yeah, that's that's a horrifying and strange image for the world to see.
Yeah.
And I've seen other people do that gag as well, like... I forget where, since maybe on some crazy cartoon show or something, but, you know, and then has the sort of futuristic king that's leaving the forest, you know, leaving nature and off to bigger and better things, you know, a rocket ship taking you to Nirvana.
Exactly.
And he had, you know, very specific art direction here. But I couldn't get the king right on there. The guy writing, it was just looking stupid, you know, for a while. And I said, you know, and he pushed me and he got a better drawing, you know, I finally got it right. And I had to to tell him his art direction was really good. You know, he got what he needed out of there.
Well, I'm looking at it now, and the mouse looks incredibly ferocious as well, which is quite a good achievement with a mouse.
Oh, yeah, thanks. I mean, I think it's more of a rat, really. Well, I guess it reads.
Yeah, but the teeth and the whole, it's got this kind of moving feel about it, in motion feel about it.
Yeah, I was pleased with that face. It needed to be kind of scary.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and it's a nice kind of a loose sketch there. And big bollocks there in the back.
Do you know, I hadn't noticed that until you pointed it out. Thank you very much, George. That's
there you go. You're welcome.
Opened up another aspect of me there, yeah.
Well, I should say, do you want to hear about, you know, Roy, I'd say the weird thing is that Roy's had a strange kind of a weird impact on my life, just kind of coincidentally.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, first getting him that gig at the Abbey Pub in Chicago. And then well, the strange thing at that time was that I, you know, it was in December that I got that gig and met him. And then he went, you know, all across the States. And in at the end of the gig, at the end of the tour, he did the show in New York at the Bottom Line, which is now closed.
Yeah.
In New York City. And I hadn't ever been to New York, and I had a couple friends that lived there. And I thought, you know, I always wanted to visit New York, and this was a great excuse to go, and I had some place to stay. So I got some plane tickets. I said, so, well, Roy, and I went and saw him at Bill and Laurie's show in Wisconsin. And so I told him there, I says, you know, I'm gonna come and see you in New York as well. So, you know, this will be great.
Mm.
Three Roy Harper gigs, all in, you know, only a month's time or whatever.
Yeah.
So I show up to New York, but before, my whole life in Chicago totally fell apart. My life transformed after he went on his merry way. Mm. My girlfriend dumped me.
Yeah.
The first sort of big love of my life, and then we're living together and all that, and and then I got dumped for my first real design job.
Oh right.
They sort of let most everyone go.
Yeah.
So I was
pretty pretty rough time then.
Yeah, it was a rough time, but I thought, well, I'll bring my portfolio along to New York.
Ah, right.
When I go see Roy there, so I had only like one job contact, but one thing led to another, and next thing I knew, I was testing for this job, for a Disney company. Disney had leased this company called Jumbo Pictures, and they were doing Doug. That was their popular kids show that they did, and but they were doing some 101 Dalmatians episodes, and so this was a good gig for me, you know, doing this animated series, and I had tested and it seemed to go well, and I didn't know quite sure if I had the job, but so when I saw Roy, I think the night after the gig or the night before the gig, we were having dinner. I said, you know, I think I may be moving to New York because to work for Disney.
Yeah.
All things. And he's like, keeping Walt on ice, eh? Which is funny.
Yeah.
And so that's what I did. In 3 weeks' time, I moved to New York City from Chicago.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, later I moved to California for a few years.
Yeah.
And then we ended up coming back here. We really, my wife and I, you know, really love it here. You know, we ended up kind of finding that home was New York, but it's strange that you know, I wouldn't have necessarily gone. I wouldn't have gone. Well, I was planning on going to California.
Yeah, because life is full of these little moments where there was a visible fork in the road and something happened and you went one way. You know,
it was just weird chance.
I mean, I'm not a particular believer in fate or anything, but you can definitely look back on your life and think of key moments when a decision was made or something happened, and as a result, everything changed.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's just strange it was a pretty big one for me, and that Roy was, you know, the reason that I was going to New York at all. I wouldn't have. I would have just gone shopping my portfolio around California. Mm-hmm. And
yeah,
but it's, you know, it's neat, the animation business out here. It's kind of neat, and I've, you know, made my mark here, and so it's been pretty good out here for me.
Speaking as a naive Englishman who's been to New York once and California four or five times on business. I've always had the impression that it would be much easier to live on the West Coast than the East Coast because it's got a more, quotes, European, unquotes, feel to it and seemed a bit more relaxed. But evidently you don't agree with that.
On the West Coast, you feel that way?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, the neat thing about New York is you don't really need a car, you know? You know, and it's not, it's much more compact, and it's not, it's even feels more compact than like Chicago. It's not, you know, it's condensed and it's compact, and but it's a lot of people. I remember getting here, being, you know, getting up high on a building and looking out and just seeing buildings in every direction, just as far as you could see. But once you get used to that, you know, and there's, I mean, I feel like it's more. You know, in L.A. and San Francisco, you know, people can get, you know, sort of get extra large egos sometimes, and especially in the entertainment industry. Right. And, you know, here it's actually more laid back. Like people, I mean, it's all here as well, but it's a little less ridiculous.
Interesting.
I'd say. Yeah. And it's, I think, feels more European, or like, well, my neighborhood here, I'm living in Brooklyn, and there's like my kids' schools is like, it's 30 some languages spoken there, and it said and it feels like real integration. While, you know, people are, the thing about New York is that everyone walks down the street, you know, and we all walk past each other,
right?
Yeah. And so there's at least that level of contact, and yeah, we've got great friends like through our daughter, and but you know, we've got kids from, you know, there's a lot of people from Middle East, and there's a lot of Jewish people all mixed in the same.
Well, you see, they say that traveling broadens the mind because you get to experience other cultures and have your mind a bit more open to the way other people think in different ways. And from what you're saying, you're getting some of that without having to travel.
That's right,
and it's that, like that definitely is good.
Yeah, yeah, just taking your kids to school and going to the PTA meeting or whatever. Yeah, I mean, you've got a lot of the world represented there, and it's neat. I think that they say it's like one of the most diverse neighborhoods in the country or something, which is amazing. And we really like it here for that reason. It feels really international. And, you know, I think that LA is probably that way too, but you know, you get all spread out and people live in sort of different neighborhoods and you get tired of driving everywhere. So people kind of stay in one spot or another spot. And it's here, it's like you could, you know, people kind of mix up more and they say, oh, we'll meet you at the pub in Manhattan, this one or that one, or you want to go see this show in Brooklyn or, and it's, everybody can kind of get with, you know, under an hour, you can easily take a train and you're there. So that's really cool thing about New York.
Okay, dragging things back to Roy.
Sorry.
I'm interested to know what you think about what the role of artwork is in a sort of musical context, because the reason I want to talk about this is that Roy recently produced a very long, detailed essay on the Stormcock artwork.
Yeah,
an essay called "The Code in the Artwork," and he revealed a lot of stuff that made me scurry off and look at my album cover.
Yeah,
and suddenly think, my God, I didn't notice that. And how themes and concepts that were in the artwork that were so in tune with what was, no pun intended, in the music. And I'd never really thought about it, and I'd never really analysed the artwork to any great degree. And obviously, that was an aspect of the art, of the work as a whole, that I hadn't appreciated before he decided to share some of his you know, fission with everybody. And I thought you'd have an opinion on this, because music is not... Music is an, obviously a single media experience when you're just sat there listening, but it needn't necessarily be so, need it? And presumably you would think that static artwork or even moving pictures can add a whole different level to the experience. Is that right?
That's, yeah, absolutely. You know, and I think, you know, I love film and storytelling in general, and I think you can do that through a video or an illustration. And, you know, Roy had said on some of these, like, well, this is the only video this is going to get, you know, this picture.
Right.
And so he's packing a lot in there.
Yeah.
And he really knows, and he's really specific and has all these ideas about what he wants. And I really like that he wrote the that code and the artwork stuff. I think that and I found it, you know, illuminating for me as well.
Well, some people have said that it has sullied their experience of the songs in a certain way, because Roy writes things in a very dense fashion, and you don't always quite pick up some of the cues of what he's talking about. And I think as a result, a lot of people have found that they're sort of subconsciously filling in images, imagery or concepts that perhaps weren't part of his original intention. And one very valid question is that not just as valid as the composer's sort of intent? Does it spoil it for people having everything spelled out?
I can see that. I can see that argument. I mean, you know, artists, everyone has their interpretation. If you read a book or whatever, you know, the way you visualize it or the way, you know, if you listen to a song, you know, how you interpret lyrics. I mean, and that's fun. However, his stuff is so dense, as you say, and layered that, I don't know, I always like it, you know?
Yeah.
And for him in particular. I think maybe not with everybody, for more of a simple, you know, some love song or something. But when you've got a song as, like the songs on Stormcock, you know, I didn't, until I read this stuff, I didn't fully understand, you know, all of Same Old Rock or Me and My Woman, for example. And I just really enjoyed reading that, you know, especially reading, I feel like I had my head around Same Old Rock pretty well already. Although, you know, some of the clues I got just like reading in the Unhinged liner notes and stuff. I think it's good that he puts these things out, because, and I understand that some people are going to be like, well, you know, I want to interpret it my own way, but they're missing out on really what inspired Roy to write this stuff. And I don't know what his intention was. I mean, I just find it really fascinating.
Yeah, I'm with you on that, actually. I think it's perfectly okay to have your own interpretation, but you can have more than one interpretation of something, and it doesn't necessarily invalidate anything.
Yeah, I mean, don't you think you can have... I don't know if it spoils it for you. I don't know, for me it added more. Like, I always... I mean, I already knew what was meant by the horde strides out and... what is that in Me and My Woman? I'm getting out the lyrics here.
I can hear the pages rustling.
Leafing through the papers. I always loved in Me and My Woman the lyric, the verse that says, "The Lord speaks out and the pig pens fawn, the sword slides out and the nations mourn, the hordes stride out and the chosen spawn, the devil rides out and the heavens yawn." I mean, to me, that was all very clear already. But then there's other parts in there. Although somehow I didn't kind of get the pig pins fawn. I don't know. That one went by me. So it's just kind of nice to read, like, oh, yeah, the pig pins fawn.
Well, actually, this is an interesting point, because I love the long songs. But I find, and I've said this on previous podcasts, so apologies for repeating myself, but depending on my mood, I kind of... zone in and out. I zone into some of the lyrics, and then I that starts me thinking about stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll zoom off somewhere and have a think about a concept or whatever, and then right. suddenly it'll be like I pick it back up again when I finish thinking that. So, but
and, you know, you can listen to it again and hear that yeah, other part later.
Well, that this leads me on, and you could almost say I've planned it. This leads me on to perhaps the most lyrically dense song of all, I think, which is the Lord's Prayer. Mm-hmm. Now, if ever there was a difficult song to do any kind of artwork or visual concept for, I would say that would probably be the one. But I'm starting a campaign now, so that if everybody okay. sends me 10 pence, we'll save up and then we'll pay you to produce a 25-minute epic.
Okay. That'll be easy.
Right, good. Well, we'll have it next week, please. Thank you.
Yeah. No, I would, you know, I think every one of us long songs should be, you know, short films. You know, I think that would be great. There's so much you could do with these songs, you know, and in the way that Roy thinks, you know, when he goes to visualize something, first of all, you know, it's, I think he has got a lot of imagery in his head as he writes the words, and then
right.
then sort of take it to the next level when he has somebody draw the stuff out. Or, you know, I think sometimes, as was described in the Same Old Rock, I believe it was, mm-hmm. on the code and the artwork, I think he kind of already had, you know, as that stuff was all sort of there in his head, you know, and it's part of the and the illustration, I think it helps to make it clear,
you know
and I especially if it was actually a film, like a music video.
Do you remember in the liner notes, I think it's on Life Mask, he says, for the Lord's Prayer, don't be frightened, it's just a movie.
That's right. I remember, I do.
Just suddenly popped into my head while we were talking there.
Yeah, and I think Roy would like to have films of these kinds of songs.
I'm sure he would. Have you watched the Beyond the Door DVD, George?
Yes.
I mean,
I have.
I like that, and I find it's a different way of consuming, if you like, the songs. And I have to be in the mood for the visual side of things.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it added a lot of depth to a lot of the stuff on there, apart from the concert footage, of course. But there's also the conceptual stuff. It's brilliant, brilliant stuff.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I forget. There were some that were really, really pretty. And, you know, the stuff on there, like Punch and Judy, for example, that are just great new songs, you know. Anyway, there was some talk before about, like, how people sort of seem to have missed this, that it's kind of a new record, you know.
It is, and it's kind of fallen by the wayside, and I still don't quite understand why. But
and, you know, and I think, you know, there's something to be said for a more visual interpretation of some of the songs. It would need to be like something from Stormcock, for example. But I love that Punch and Judy video where there's a bit of acting, you know, and he's a good performer, you know. Is, you know, aside from the singing and the guitar playing, I mean,
yeah,
it's in his expressions on his face, and you know, again, there's a lot of humor, and you know, I think he's just really a phenomenal performer, really entertaining, you know, and then you get, again, you get some humor with this depth, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Well, moving on, we're heading towards my closing parts of the interview, but I mean, we've talked already about the music, and it's quite clear that you really, really like the four long pieces on Stormcock and the whole epic side of the songwriting strikes a chord with you. I mean, is that what it is for you? Is it the fact that he's an uncompromising writer who will tackle things head on? I mean, what is it that really engages you with the music?
Well, I think that first thing, it was that Another Day song. It's just this gorgeous, you know, sad, strange love song, you know, an unusual love song. Mm. And he's got a few of those, like I'll See You Again, or even Forbidden Fruit, or just interesting, different kinds of love songs.
Yeah.
So, you know, I love a nice love song. And I think that there's a lot of people that's what they gravitate towards with Roy. So That was, you know, the first thing that drew me to him. But then when I heard a song like Same Old Rock, where he's using, you know, biblical imagery to sort of battle the Bible, you know, that was perfect.
Yes, very, you know? Good, yeah.
And
yeah.
I, you know, and I I grew up, so I guess I'm one of these guys that was drawn to it where I had sort of some, you know, uncomfortable religious stuff going on in my childhood.
Right.
And so, you know, it spoke right to me. And so I think that's probably where some people are probably like, I don't know, what's he doing that for? There's those of us that are, you know, you're like, wow, you know, there's someone else that thinks like I do.
Many years ago, when I was still a student, actually, I was playing, like you, I always have this vague hope that I will make people see the light and they'll suddenly say, wow, this great guy is fantastic. I now understand what you've been talking about for the last 10 years. And I used to play the albums quite a lot. And I played Stormcock, and there was this woman who said, I can see what this guy's trying to do, but he's trying to change the world all on his own, and it's just too much for one person to bear. He really shouldn't be trying it. I could see her point, but my response is, as you've just said, it shows that some other people think the way that I do, and even if they can't change everything, they can at least express what the rest of us think and make us aware that we're not the only people that feel that way, and that's how things start to be changed.
That, I think that's right, you know, and, you know, there's, you know, as Roy has said on several occasions that, you know, I think he feels kind of isolated in the being someone that's outspoken in this way, you know, criticizing big parts of society, you know, society, the way we do things socially, politically, and, you know, just the sham that is the church or...
Yeah.
The history of religion, you know, the history of religion is the history of the state.
Indeed.
You know, and it's just what he does is he gives you a million great lines for this kind of thing. And you know, but there have been, he's not completely alone. And we've got, from time to time, there is someone that comes along and says something like what he's saying.
Yeah.
And it's great that people, they're not... It's not silly for one guy to go out and I think that can't be easy or comfortable, you know. He must feel like it's just a constant uphill battle. But you have to believe in what you're doing and that it's worth doing. And I'm so glad that he has. I think that I think it's been worth it. And I know that he's. I remember him saying at somewhere at some point that you know. That he feels like it's all, you know, he expresses frustration. Like, this is all, you know, a song like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
This is all, nothing's changed, no change. And I don't think it's completely true. I understand that frustration and, it ebbs and flows.
It ebbs and flows very slowly, but it does ebb and flow. It's not like, revolutions don't very often happen. You don't often have an overnight switch.
No, but communities and ways of thinking, and you know, you find groups, more and more groups of people that think like you do. Like, that's one thing I was saying, talking favorably about my neighborhood here in Brooklyn, is we've got all these great, not just an international slice of life here, but, you know, it's surprising to see how cool and smart and how thoughtful people are, and people have similar thoughts on politics and religion and philosophy or what have you. And, you know, we're not all alone. We can be together, you know, and then we can, you know, it is hard to try to organize things, but, you can't give up because there's a lot of opposition to, I mean, there's just a lot of, you know, as you know, right now, the world is, in a crazy state.
Well, it's not always easy to swim against the tide, going back to our sort of main theme, really. Yeah. Roy definitely has always swum against the tide. And I had my Patrick McGruen frenzy last podcast.
Yeah.
Or the one before, actually, because this is going to be out on our second part, probably. He also is, or portrayed in The Prisoner, somebody who, again, swam against the tide and would be... completely unbending to things that went against his own personal code.
Yeah.
And I think that's the same reason. That's the same thing. It is that ability for somebody to stick so firmly to what they know is right. It's a very admirable trait, because most people will compromise in various ways, you know?
Yeah. Yeah,
we all do, don't we? But sometimes there's something that you think, no, I really cannot compromise on this. This is unmovable. I can't, you know.
Yeah, and I think it's been, although I'm sure it's been painful at times for him, I think that it's been worth it. I mean, I hope he knows that, because you know, people. It's great that he's been uncompromising. Yeah. You know. It is needed, and I think it's had an impact of some kind, you know?
Yeah.
I think just him on his own has had some impact, and also inspiring a new batch of musicians to be more outspoken and not just say not much.
Yes, and that's interesting, actually, because on MySpace, I mean, I have a lot of quotes, friends, unquotes on there from my podcast presence, and I know Roy does as well. And it's very interesting the amount of bands and singer-songwriters and other people who cite Roy as an influence. And you think, yeah, actually, that's a really good thing. That's a really, you know, moving things forward.
I mean, on one hand, he hasn't had like a batch or a couple of huge smash singles. But, you know, what would you rather have? I mean, at one point he had said, you know, his big moment, kind of, the big moment for him was when he made Stormcock. Like, you know, he was poised and things were expected of him. And, you know, him being, having the nature that he has, he's like, if this was his chance, he was going to do something, you know, really great and really challenging. And, you know, that... Look, it's worked. I mean, we're still talking about this, and people,
no doubt,
you know, like Joanna Newsom had him open for her because you know, he's her, you know, that was her favorite record, you know, and it's had its impact, I think, and it's, you know, it's been you know, that's better than a hit single that keeps, you know, the royalties coming in or whatever. I mean, it's easy for me to say, but I'm glad that he did it, you know.
Me too. All right, on a slightly lighter note, before we wrap up, are there any anecdotes or stories that you want to share with us, Roy-related, or have you told us them all already?
Well, the only other thing, I guess, is that we've named our daughter Harper.
Oh, brilliant.
And it's a funny story because... she's about to turn 6 now, but she's on March 15th, the Ides of March, actually. And it's strange. She was born the night America was rolling into Baghdad.
Oh, gosh.
And I was in the hospital room watching TV. You know, my wife went under, you know. She's had this medicine. It's like, you know, I think it was that was the lucky thing for her, because there was the tanks rolling in. And but we named... And I sent Roy a message like, well, we're not really naming her after you. We're naming her after Harper Lee, who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird.
Right.
But that's a bit tongue-in-cheek because, of course, my wife suggested, like, we're thinking of different names.
Yeah.
Trying to think of different names. And we kept ditching names. And we thought, she's like, we'd been looking at To Kill a Mockingbird because we were working on a pitch idea for a kid's cartoon show we were thinking about, and we were looking at that book as a source of inspiration for the kind of character dynamics between these kids. And so Monica, so that was on the mind. Monica's like, what about Harper? And I says, well, Roy will think that's really weird. But he was really cool about it, and I'd sort of like to retract my comment to him that it, you know, that she's not really named after him. I mean, I think she's named after him and Harper Lee, you know, two great literary figures, I would say.
Can I ask, somewhat tongue-in-cheek, whether your wife shares your enthusiasm for Roy's music?
That's funny. You should ask that. Yeah, you know, and she does. And she, you know, we actually went to... she's lucky. because she's only seen two Roy Harper gigs.
Right.
And they were the Royal Festival Hall gig.
Oh, yeah.
And then it was that show in Bedford. Not Bedford. That's David Bedford. The show up north of London at the festival a few years ago.
Oh, okay.
Yes, you know
that's right. I remember that. Yes, I was quite upset I couldn't go to that. Yeah, yeah.
It was great. It was great. That's he's got his. He uses pictures on, I notice online from that a lot.
Yeah.
And he was in top form that night, and it was nice because little Harper was there, and at the time she's like 3 years old, and you know, we kind of told her about what was going on, and Roy comes on stage, and she points up. She's like, "That's Roy Harper." that was really nice.
Yeah,
and then she
cool.
proceeded to fall asleep as he went into Stormcock, you know.
Oh,
very
wow.
relaxed. It was cute. But Monica said, my wife said, you know, at the end of Hors d'oeuvres, which I was so pleased that he started to play that more, because I remember that was one that he was performing very much, like during the 90s.
Yeah, that's right.
It was tough to get a new recording of that, you know. But... he did it beautifully. And, you know, with those nice high notes he's hitting at the end with the echo on, she's like, my God, is he doing that all with his own voice? You know, he's floating into outer space, you know. And, it's really amazing. So I think that's when she was really blown away at those gigs.
Yeah.
She's been a real good sport. I had a couple other... girlfriends that I had lived with before I got married, and they were a little less tolerant. I mean, they were cool with it, and they actually saw him as well and stuff, and I think that they're like, oh, that's cool. But like Monica, I think, has been real impressed, and she likes his music. So yeah, I'm lucky there. But it's funny because of the previous girlfriends. When I first met her, I gave her a break for a couple of weeks. I realized it was going to be a long relationship.
Right.
So one of my best friends said to her, "So has he talked to you about? Has he told you how to get?" She's like, "No. What do you mean? What are you talking about?"
Oh, brilliant!
So I just thought, well, you know, we're going to be together a long time, so. There'll be time for that.
you lure them in, you see, and then suddenly you unleash this obsession on them later on. That's you know.
That's a good tactic. Anyone wants to use it.
Okay. Music. I ask everybody this question. What's going to happen to music in the future? Are people still going to pay for it? Are people ever going to get to some sort of model where people pay for downloads? What do you think? You got any opinion on what's going to happen with music now that it's so easy to rip it off?
Yeah. Yeah. And this is something that I love that you're talking about it on this podcast. And I've been kind of asking people what they thought, actually. And, you know, I've got, there's two guys at work. One that's, you know, deep into funk and stuff. And he's an older dude. And he's a big music fan, you know, and it's funny. He had an opportunity similar to me that he got to meet and work with Bootsy Collins, and he, you know, a huge, you know, his like big hero. So it's funny. I was like, I can relate to
that. Yeah.
We had something that we could relate about, but he's like, no, I just look for blogs and I just take it, you know. And this is someone that's, you know, someone that's. I was a little bit surprised. And then this younger kid that's into all this new indie music, as I am as well, he does the same thing. But they both still buy things. And, you know, this kid was saying, I'll buy the vinyl. I'll grab the MP3s offline and then I'll buy the vinyl. I was like, well, what if, you know, one of your favorite bands has a new release? Won't you go to their site and pay for the download? He's like, nah, I'll just wait for a week or day and just grab it.
He's like,
but you know, I'll go see the show and I'll buy something. I'll buy a record or a CD and then so I feel fine about that. So I think, and these are two people that love music, you know, and then I'm like, I'm an idiot. I've been paying for these downloads. I guess I felt like, you know, I got to get with the times and start it's ripping off music, which is, I haven't done really.
Yeah.
But I tend to just go to the site and download it. And I know that there's probably a good amount of people that do. But I don't think you can sort of stop people from taking it. And it's not necessarily a total crime, I guess.
Well, there's a number of schools of thought, of course, and one that I've talked about before is the fact that it encourages people to try out new bands that they wouldn't have spent any money on.
Yeah.
And maybe they'll find some gems, and then maybe they will start buying the music and certainly seeing the concerts and so on. But there's another school of thought, which is that downloading stuff sort of cheapens the whole experience for the listener as well, because it becomes a throwaway commodity rather than something precious. When I first started getting into Roy's stuff and picked up some of those early albums, especially the awareness reissues of stuff that I only had like tapes of, and I got my Stormcock gatefold sleeve home and sat there listening to it, that kind of experience is lost to me now. I still buy CDs, and in fact I told you yesterday, George, when we were planning for the interview, I have a basement full of CDs and I come down here and wallow in it every now and then. But that's becoming less and less common, and people, I think, when something is so freely consumable, start to value things less. It's like just watching something on the TV, and as soon as it's finished, you forget about it.
I agree. I mean, one thing that's happened to me in the last couple of years is that I'm at work all the time on a network of everyone on a computer, and we all have iTunes up just to play. Many of us have iTunes, and you just put it on there, and you start putting some music in there.
Yeah.
And so I hear all this stuff on other people's things, and I'll just walk over to their... So I've done it as well, but for me, I just like walk over to their desk and be like, hey, can you grab that on a folder? Can you put those MP3s in a folder? And hey, that's really good. So I've been buying less music as well. And I think that at the end of the day, and I still buy some CDs and records occasionally, but I'm really just kind of getting more into this MP3 thing. You kind of can't help it. But I see what you mean, that becomes less of a commodity. Like,
yeah.
So much easier to dismiss something. It's like, I don't like that, and you just delete, or whatever.
The analogy is, in the old days, you'd do these tapes, you'd tape things off people. But always then, you knew it was a tape of something. The quality wasn't as good, because cassettes are pretty crappy. And, these days, you've got a bit-perfect copy of something. And, what are you getting if you actually buy it? You're getting some artwork and the ethical correctness, but... For a lot of people, it's too much of a temptation, I think.
Well, I think that, I think that the thing is that there'll be less, I think at the end of the day, there's going to be less record sales, as it were. There's going to be, but there will still be some money made that way. People will still download, people will still buy the record or the CD at the gig or at a shop. Mm-hmm. But I'm telling you, one of the biggest record stores here in New York, that's just been forever on St. Mark Street, this Kim's Music, it's in a shambles. I think it's on its way out. It's for lease. And then the Tower Records down the street, just Tower, just gone.
And then
I just went into Virgin Megastore here in New York, and there's tons of sales and half price CDs, and it just looks like it's dying to
it
me.
Does.
And
yeah, it does.
I think it's inevitable. I think that I don't really know what's going to happen, but it seems that there's going to be less money made from the record itself. But people say, "Oh, well, you make money by selling T-shirts at the gig or whatever." And the funniest thing is that this guy told me that he saw some young guy at a concert go up to the merchandise table, and he saw, shirts or this or that, and he runs. He walks up and he sees the vinyl on the table. He's like, "Oh, cool! You have calendars." I don't know if that's some sort of indication, but I thought that's great.
That's
funny. I thought, wow, I need to make some calendars of some kind to sell. I think bands need to make calendars now. As many, and I saw Frank Black perform in L.A. recently, and he had something that was interesting. He had a little thumb drive that had like his little like logo or something on it, yeah. And it was like a live gig that was a video.
Oh, okay.
On like a, you know.
Oh, that's a good impulse buy that people would go for.
I suppose. I think it's about being creative with your merchandise, and because you're going to have to make that money somewhere. And also, I like the idea of indie bands, you know, and even big bands like the Radiohead thing, just being like, you're taking more of the money themselves,
oh,
and cutting out these record companies. And you know, maybe you're not going to make as much money as the Jonas Brothers or Britney Spears or something, but you know, that's just a whole other
but
thing.
Then you won't hate yourself in the morning either, so yeah.
Yeah. Or, you know, die in the Viper room or something.
All right, final question, George. Well, penultimate question. We're talking about music. What other music would you recommend to a discerning Harper listener, if any?
Okay. Well, I have a little list here.
Good.
For English, there's a couple of English guys that I like, and one is this guy called Stephen Jones, and his moniker is Baby Bird. Mm. And he's been out. He had a hit in the early 90s or the mid-90s called You're Gorgeous.
Oh,
you remember
yes,
that?
I remember that, yeah.
So I think people kind of think, oh, what? I think that he's been frustrated with that because he had a hit song and a video, and you saw it on MTV and stuff, and it was a nice pop song. But the guy's got a lot more to him than that. And in fact, I remember showing it to Roy, like showing one of his CDs, like, look, this guy is good. And he's, Roy kind of snickered, you know. And he didn't know what was on there. But he's got this record that it's just taken a piss on America in a way, but in a good way. You know what I mean? Like, and I could tell that he had toured through and taken weird pictures in the Midwest and had a look. And the record's great. And he's got all of his records really are challenging. Every one, even the one that has that hit song on it, they've got all this challenging stuff on it. So there's another instance of someone that's got more going on in his music than. Okay. And it's weird. I like stuff that's weird, too. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like another thing I like is the Butthole Surfers, you know.
I've heard their names so much, but I've never heard any.
You know, I just saw them twice. They've kind of gotten back together and been doing some tours. You've got to catch them if you all at all liked any of their stuff. They were cool in the 80s and the late 80s and or all, like the 80s and I was a big fan before, and I was moved at a Butthole Surfers show both times I saw them. It was like a love-in somehow, you know.
Yeah,
it was just a lot of warmth in the room for like, and that stuff's also really, you know, they've got a song called Barbecue Pope, and they, you know, they do a really funny version of Hurdy Gurdy Man.
Oh right,
like,
yeah,
it really sort of makes fun of Donovan, and again in a good way. You know what I mean? Like, I love that. I think that's a nice song, but they make it sound really, really sort of silly. I don't know. It's they're very cool and. But another guy that I like is David Thomas Broughton. Have you heard of him?
No, I haven't.
And he's a indie guy from England. And he's got a fantastic record he came out with a couple years ago called The Complete Guide to Insufficiency that everybody should check out. And it's
oh, I like the title.
It's like, yeah, and it's like four songs. It's really, really cool. Oh. And another guy I like is... The Real Tuesday Weld, and I've done two music videos for this band. It's an English band. This guy named Stephen Coates. It lives in Clerkenwell, London, and it's kind of a loungy. He's got himself a label called Antique Beat, and that's sort of descriptive of what he does. He'll take like old traditional jazz samples and mess with them, and then he's got a whole band, you know, including like a clarinet player. You know, and along with the guitar, bass, and drums, and then he's up on singing and doing, you know, cueing samples on his laptop, and that's really neat. And they have a lot of really cool stuff, music videos, and a very cool arty band, kind of with a loungy sound. And then another one that And you can check out the music videos at my website if you want.
What is your website, since we're talking about it? Do you want to read it out giant, the URL?
Yeah. It's giantsquideye.com. Yeah, and I've got a MySpace page. Just georgefort.blogspot.com. Okay. That has also links to these music videos, as well as some of my design work for these cartoon shows. Back to the other stuff I like is some cool American things. Well, I like Elliot Smith.
Oh, yes, know? Yes, he's good, yeah.
And, you know, tragic story there. And another one is Jeff Buckley, of course, and Tim Buckley as well.
Yes, completely.
But Jeff is, you know, beautiful. And then there's some new bands like Phosphorescent I like quite a lot. This is like a Brooklyn-based band.
Okay.
There's a band called Fleet Foxes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've heard their album, and I've got a live recording as well. It's very good.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another neat thing is Little Joy. And I believe her name is Dawn McCarthy, and she has a neat EP out called Fawn Fables. That's the name of her.
Right.
It's the name of her, like her moniker. And Anthony and the Johnsons, I think, is quite good. Have you heard of them?
No, I haven't.
It's pretty strange, arty kind of stuff. So there's a few.
Yeah, good.
I'm always open for something new, you know.
Well, that's the sign of an eclectic musical taste, which is what I think everybody should have. Is there anything else, George, that you'd like to bring up before we close the curtains on the interview?
I don't think so. I think I pretty much exhausted everything I could say. Sorry.
Good. No. It's,
but yeah. No, it's been a lot of fun, Paul. Really, I guess I'd just like to thank you for everything you've done. And I'd said to you before, you know, that you know you've helped just the mailing list. Mm. You know, that got me. You know, it actually led me to working with Roy.
And I absolutely love hearing stories like that. That's fantastic. Yeah.
And, you know, it's been such a great experience, you know. And just having access to all this music and people that have shared the same enthusiasm for it.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's all about, I think.
Yeah.
Well, George, in that case, thank you ever so much for talking to us.
Yeah, well, thank you.
We'll look forward to seeing what you come up with in the future.
Absolutely. we'll keep you posted.
Okay, cheers.
All right, bye-bye.
Thanks a lot, George. I really enjoyed our interview. Very interesting person to talk to. Excellent stuff. George has a website, giantsquideye.com, which I didn't publicise last time because there was some kind of security problem with the site, which is now resolved. But I'll put the link to that in the show notes and you can see more of what George gets up to in his day job. Okay, some more music now. I actually had a request from Bez to play Cora, which is a track from Commercial Break.
the sadness in my heart as I was leaving. It was maybe that I might not understand. The distance playing host to disbelieving. I must have never seen.
That was Cora from the album Commercial Breaks. Now, that album famously was never actually released by EMI. Roy recorded it during a period of great turmoil and there was all sorts of problems. And many years later, some of the tracks appeared on the Looney on the Bus album, and then eventually Commercial Breaks got its own proper release. But it's unavailable at the moment, and Roy's site says there are no plans to repress. It's a bit of a shame because it's not the greatest album. Pretty sure Roy doesn't like it very much, but I think there's some hidden gems on there. Now for the A to Z of Harper, this time it's the letter T, and I've chosen Tom Tiddler's Ground. In the lyric book, Roy writes, "Tom Tiddler's Ground is a kid's game in which you get chased about, but once you call out, 'I'm on Tom Tiddler's ground,' and you stand still for some agreed seconds, you can no longer be touched, tigged or tagged. It's much more interesting than that because you get tagged when you least expect it with a shout of 'Tig, you're on' by the person who has just been on. In the song, we have all been tagged back to childhood sensibilities of raw emotion and love again, and we are held by them, looking back at them. Having to treat concepts like freedom with a progressed degree of inquiry. Being on is to be thrust into your own limelight with surely all the responsibilities that entails. What's it like to be on? It's a look in the mirror and an own-up emotion. I used to think that these things were important, but tides ebb and flow. My time hasn't come, but I'm old before it. Que pasa? I'm on. What? So, the version of the track that I've chosen to play is from the Beyond the Door DVD. This is from the audio CD that accompanies it. As you know by now, I like to play live versions of songs every now and then just to add a different flavour to it, because we're all very familiar with the album versions, and I particularly like this live rendition.
You know, I thought you had passed, but you caught me at last. Well, you know I could never be warned. Now that you're here, you finally do hear. It's so clear on the wings of the dawn. Your smile starts to shine as you breathe in the brine of the spray of the very same day. The same day we all go, when we're absolutely sure that we know what it is to be floating away. And there's a loveliness in Tom Tiddler's ground. Oh, there's a loveliness from Tiddler's ground. Oh, there's a love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Long before Eden was lost and found. But you know you'll have to be kind if you're ever gonna find the place that your face could have shown. Especially when you don't dare to force anyone there to share in the ice being blown. And there's a love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Oh, there's a love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Oh, there's a love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Long before Eden was lost and found. You heard me say yes. You know it's just a guess. Somebody else shouted no. You know freedom is free of all forces to be, yes. And the ice that you two watched me throw, there's a love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Oh, there's a love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Long before Eden was lost and found. You know I thought you had passed, but you caught me. Last. Well, you know I could never be one. Now that you're here, you finally do hear so clear on the wings of the dawn. You made up your mind. To find before you were finally born. You know freedom is free of all forces that be, yes. And the ice that you two thought'd be thrown. And there's a love Tom Tiddler's ground. Oh, there's a love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Oh, there's a love nest in Tom Tiddler's ground. Long before Eden was lost and
Tom Tiddler's Ground, and I really like Matt Churchill's accompaniment on that one as well. It's understated but works really nicely. Now on to the feedback. First of all, from the forums, I've had various positive responses from podcast 20. Webby Lar says, another good one, Paul. George seems to be a thoroughly likeable bloke, polite, funny and amusing. Oh, and talented. God, I hate him. P.S. I was groaning at your Y2K bug joke. Thank you. I am to please. And he then added, forgot to mention that the version of South Africa played on the podcast is the best version I have ever heard. I don't have the BBC session stuff, so I'm obviously missing out. I think you might be there. Dr. Doom the Optimist, otherwise known as Adam Leonard, says, Crawler, geez, that's the last time I pay you a compliment, Davison. Really enjoyed this one. Interesting to hear Roy's approach and direction on the artwork. Is there a part two to this? Well, yes, we've just had that, of course. Okay, Zoltan says, Hi, Paul, I really enjoyed the recent podcast. Congratulations on that, very well done. It's always a special event for me to hear the podcast. It's good to hear about George. I looked at his pictures in the book and they look great. As for the demo version of the Dream Society, I'd also be very interested in that. Never heard about it. Do you think it will be available someday? Well, I can't really say, but if we all ask for it, who knows? Something might happen. Bears wrote, Hi Paul, just listened to episode 20 and have caught up. Only problem is I've now got to wait 2 weeks for the next one. I have a memory of a track called Cora. Have a feeling it was the B-side to Casualty. Well, it wasn't, but it was on commercial breaks. But he says, I'd love to hear it again if it's out there, which I played for you earlier, Bears. Hope you liked it. And Sean says, Great podcast as usual, Paul. There's always something to look forward to these days. It's great hearing how George became a fan, and I can relate to the unrequited response concerning Roy's music from his friends. Nice to hear George is a Zappa fan too. You know, we got to sit together. Great music again too. Love the South Africa from the BBC tapes. What a great set of discs, a must in any Roy Harper collection. The Festival Hall version of Sophisticated Beggar was fantastic too. Another album I regularly play. It's become a ritual in my house now, each month that I have to get my son off to bed, then I get settled under the stairs with my Stella, etc., and headphones on. I hope Stella enjoys it. Undisturbed escapism and peace to drift off for an hour or two. Nice one, Paul. I look forward to the next instalment. Cheers, guys. I had an email from Keith Bedford. Hello, Paul. Thanks for the name check in the last podcast. You're welcome. It was, as ever, very entertaining. It's great to hear Americans enthuse about Roy. You tend to think of him as quintessentially English, but his themes are pretty universal and deserve a worldwide audience. Saw Nick in Basingstoke on the Saturday, and he was absolutely brilliant. Near capacity, enthusiastic audience with plenty of good-natured banter, and he really earned his money. Started at 7:30, finished at 10:30, then signed autographs. One laugh out loud moment, and there were several because he's so quick verbal sparring with his audience, was to acknowledge his facial resemblance to Robin Williams. Do you mean Robin Williams or Robbie Williams or Robin Williamson? Who knows? Never thought of this resemblance before, but once he brought my attention to it, he's absolutely right. Whilst at the gig, we purchased the Love Is Music DVD and look forward to watching it on our return from holiday off to Cyprus for 2 weeks holiday tomorrow. He'll be back by now, so I hope you had a nice time, Keith. And finally, at last, I have a voicemail.
Hi, Paul. John Beresford. Been a Roy Harper fan for years. I'm 51 years old now. Long in the tooth. The podcast, mate, absolutely fantastic. Never heard anything like it in my life. Been following Roy 1973 when I very first heard my first album. And I remember the days where just reading perhaps an article in a magazine or perhaps getting the odd glimpse of him on the old grey whistle test was something to be treasured. But the amount of information on him now in the internet and, as I say, your wonderful podcasts, I've only just sort of found them. And I've got all 20 episodes now downloaded on my iTunes, on my iPod, and I actually work in a care home with six guys with a learning disability, and I sleep there. I usually go to bed at like 1 a.m. I'm now going to bed at 9 p.m., just lying there completely darked out, headphones on. Fantastic, mate. So interesting. Today I've listened to the episode with the first part of the interview with Mr. Bill. Actually brought a tear to my eye, you know, the It's just the way it's put together, mate. Everything about it is fantastic. Well done, mate. Keep up the good work.
Thanks so much, John, for that feedback. I actually was quite moved by that. And you got cut off by the 90-second limit on the voicemail, but I think you got your message across. Thank you so much, and I hope you continue to enjoy the podcasts. Right, well, I don't have time to play any more music this month, I'm afraid, if I'm to keep under my 77-minute CD burning limit. All we have time for is credits and copyright. This podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivative Works 2.0 UK England and Wales license. That means you can share it with others, but you can't change it, claim you made it, or charge money for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by kind permission of Science Friction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution. The intro music is by kind permission of Adam Leonard. Now, if you want to help the podcast, as always, you can review us on iTunes if you use iTunes. If you want to call in with a voicemail like John did, you can call if you're in the UK 01223 850282, or if you're abroad, +44 1223 850282, or if you've got a way of recording yourself in high quality, you can send me an MP3, pd@stormcock.net, and I'll be more than happy to receive those, as you can probably guess. If you have lots of money burning a hole in your pocket, there's a PayPal donation link on the front page of stormcock.net. All donations greatly appreciated to help for the hosting, etc. And that's pretty much it for this month. Hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you next month. Bye for now.
There once was a man.